Greetings and welcome to the Beacon Broadcast from Beacon Baptist Church on Kirkpatrick Road in Burlington, North Carolina. The Beacon Broadcast is supported in part by the gifts of faithful listeners. If you'd like to correspond with Pastor Barkman and the Beacon Broadcast, or if you wish to support this radio ministry, write to the Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. The Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. Now with today's message from God's Word, here is Pastor Greg Barkman.
Amazing Grace.
Well, if you are a regular listener to the Beacon Broadcast on Sundays, you know that we have been working our way through the book of Acts, and lately in Acts chapter 20, have been looking carefully at the words of the Apostle Paul in his farewell address to the Ephesian elders, which takes up the last part of Acts chapter 20. And we are coming rapidly to the end of this chapter, and we are actually considering the final words of this sermon. But there are still a few more things that we need to look at. And Paul concludes his message to the Ephesian elders by talking about money, something that reveals the attitude of the Apostle Paul toward money, and an attitude that we need to develop as well. He talks about the danger of covetousness in verse 33, the dignity of labor in verse 34, and the delight in giving, verse 35. These are all important lessons, and we will continue looking at them one by one. Thank you for joining us on this Sunday, July 19, and thank you for remembering that we are dependent upon the financial gifts of our radio listeners to continue this broadcast on this station. Well, first of all, the danger of covetousness, and we addressed that last Lord's Day, so I'll simply review. But Paul said in Acts 20:33, I have coveted no one's silver or gold or apparel. That's a pretty striking statement, a pretty amazing statement if we really take time to think about it. Paul could say, I have coveted no one's silver or gold or apparel. Nobody in the city of Ephesus. It didn't matter what they had, and there obviously were wealthy people in that city where Paul ministered, and wealthy people who became Christians and became members of the church that Paul established and ministered to, preached the Word of God to, taught the Word of God to for about 3 years. But in spite of the fact that there were many people who had a whole lot more money, silver and gold and expensive clothes than Paul had, Paul didn't covet any of it. Can you say that? Can I say that? Well, that's what we need to develop. That's what we need to see God develop in our lives, and we need to recognize covetousness whenever it rears its ugly head and commit it immediately to the Lord and ask the Lord to help us to develop a heart that is free from covetousness. It is possible. The Apostle Paul is an example of it. I have coveted no one's silver or gold or apparel. He could say that honestly, he who alone would know the thoughts of his own heart, because the people he was talking to certainly couldn't see into his heart, but he was confident that nobody there could say, wait a minute, Paul, I saw some evidence of covetousness when you did this, when you said that, when you maneuvered in this fashion in order to try to get some financial benefit. But Paul was certain, Paul was confident that nobody would be able to contradict him, because there was no such evidence, because the fact of the matter is there was no covetousness in his heart. It's possible to have covetousness in your heart that doesn't immediately manifest itself, but like all other sins of the heart, if those sins are not dealt with, eventually they're going to work their way out to the surface in one way or another. You might be able to have malice in your heart and suppress it for a while so that nobody knows it's there, but if you don't deal with it, eventually it's going to come out, and your malice toward others is going to be manifested. And likewise with any sin of the heart, and that's certainly the case in the sin of covetousness. And we need to say, God, help me to be free from covetousness. Help me to learn with the Apostle Paul to be content with whatever you give me, to learn in whatever state I am therewith to be content, to have no desire for anything that you have not given me, O Lord. That's the goal. That's the right attitude. That's the evidence of freedom from covetousness. I don't desire anything that you have not legitimately given me. If you know it's good for me, you either have given it to me or will. I can be confident of that, O Lord. And if you haven't given it to me, or haven't yet, and I don't know what the future holds, then I can be confident that that is not something that would be good for me. So I don't want it. I don't want it. Free me from a desire for anything, O Lord, that you have not already given me, or to trust you that you will give me in the future whatever you know is good for me, and for me not to desire anything else. That's freedom from covetousness, and Paul could declare that that was his condition. I have coveted no one silver or gold or apparel. That is a very convicting statement by Paul. It ought to speak to every one of our hearts about the condition that pleases God, and ask him to help us to display the same condition that Paul displayed, the same freedom from covetousness that Paul declared. But we move from the danger of covetousness to the dignity of labor, and here's another important lesson. Verse 34, "Yes, you yourselves know that these hands have provided for my necessities and for those who are with me." Now, Paul, as you know, was a Jewish rabbi of the group called the Pharisees, but he was trained. He was a professionally trained rabbi, and Jewish rabbis were always trained to have a trade to fall back upon. They did not assume that they would be able to earn a living as a rabbi. Some of them did. I would say probably a great many of them did, but there were always those who did not. Paul, for the most part, was supported in his Christian work, his preaching ministry, by the gifts, by the offerings of God's people, but there were times when those provisions fell short. And in those times, Paul went to work and provided for himself. There's an awful lot in this. This is a short verse, but there's a lot to think about and to come to grips with, to think through. And so again, I read it. "Yes, you yourselves know that these hands have provided for my necessities and for those who were with me." Well, here's Paul's example of industry, and what is it? Number one, Paul worked hard. He worked hard at whatever he did. He certainly worked hard at the work of the gospel, but when necessity demanded that he give himself to providing for himself financially, for work, for public work, because his gospel work was not supporting him sufficiently, he worked hard at that. He worked hard at whatever he did. "You know that these hands have provided for my necessities." Manual labor, which some people in America consider to be beneath them. Some people think they've gotten to the place where they shouldn't do that. And sometimes I recognize that trait among Christians and even, yes, among ministers of the gospel. It should never be there. But sometimes ministers of the gospel who find themselves in difficult circumstances and need to work in order to provide for themselves because they don't have a church to pastor, whatever. They don't have a position in ministry that's going to support them. I've seen some who display a total unwillingness to work at manual labor. That's beneath them. They will only consider jobs that they think are at their level. They put themselves in a certain category. They are professionals, and they are going to work at only at a certain level, and they would not think of taking a job that involved manual labor. Well, they're not following the example of the Apostle Paul. You yourselves know that these hands have provided for my necessities. I thank the Lord for the memory of my own father, who was a good example of this to me. My father, who grew up on a dairy farm, and worked hard all of his life at manual labor, nevertheless went to college. Wasn't easy. Between high school and college, he worked, I think, if I recall correctly, for 3 years in order to earn money and save money to go to college. And then he went to college because his father wasn't going to be able to help him with that. But he went to college and paid his own way and graduated from college. And then he married my mother. And then he went into the service, into the Navy in World War II. When he came out of the Navy, he went to another university. His initial schooling was not at the university. It was at a college, smaller school. But he went to a larger university and acquired a master's degree, an MBA, a Master of Business Administration. He was a professional man, well-qualified man. He managed businesses, but I can remember a time when he was without work. And I saw some of the things he did to just provide for his family during that difficult time. I saw him at one point going down to the I don't know what you call it, but where the trains came into our town, and unloaded boxcars, or loaded or unloaded them, or both. Hard, back-breaking work. But he did it until something better came along. And when something better came along, he did that, something he considered to be better. But his attitude was, I will do whatever is available in order to provide for myself and my family. I'm not too good to work with my hands. I'm not too good to bend my back. It might make me sore. Probably will for a while because I'm out of shape. I haven't done this kind of work for a long time. But I'm not too good for that. I'll do it. That was a good example to me, and I've done the same thing. There was a time when I was finished with school and doing some candidating, as they call it, on weekends, that is, visiting churches that were looking for a pastor, and preaching in the church and meeting with the pulpit committee and so forth. And I had to be able to do that. I had to be flexible enough because some of these places were a long ways away. I would have to sometimes leave on a Friday or whatever, and I'd have to be in the church all day on Sunday and then come back on Monday. So I had to have a job that allowed me to do that, and the Lord provided that. But at the beginning, I just went to a temporary agency and said, I'll do whatever you've got. And I did, oftentimes working day jobs just one day at a time. Well, today we've got a need over here. You can go over here and work in this factory for one day. Over here, this factory, this business is taking inventory. You can go in there. What you're going to do is just count supplies on the shelves and make a record of them. Well, that'll be good for a day or two. And I did that. Whatever was available, I would do it until the Lord provided a steady job in construction at a pretty low level. I was not an experienced construction worker, so I had to go in at a low level. Fortunately, I had a supervisor who was a Christian and who was sympathetic to what I was doing, so he would let me be off on Monday when I needed to make these trips. But that's what I did. I mean, I dug ditches with a shovel in one place because it was a tight situation and we weren't able to get a backhoe in there to do it. And I mean, whatever was available, I would do. That's the example that Paul is demonstrating here. You yourselves know that these hands have provided for my necessities. So Paul is setting us an example, setting preachers an example. When outside support levels were insufficient for his needs, he worked with his hands. When outside support levels were adequate, he devoted his full time to the ministry. And I could take you to various verses that would demonstrate that, but I won't do that now. I'll quote them, though. You'll find evidence for that in Acts 18:15, Philippians 2:25, Acts 4:26 through 28. In other words, when the support came in, Paul devoted himself completely to the gospel. That was his primary assignment, his primary interest, his primary goal. He wanted to give himself to that full time, as we call it today. But there were times when he wasn't able to because there wasn't enough financial support to allow him to do it. So when that happened, then he devoted himself to the ministry part-time. We have a term for this today in Christian circles. We call it tent making, because that's what Paul did, actually. He doesn't say that here, but we find that elsewhere. The work that he was trained for, the manual labor that he did, was making tents. There were a lot of tents in that day of various kinds and sizes, and it was an ongoing need. There was an industry where there was always a need for more tents. Sometimes there would be tents for the military, all kinds of tents that were needed in that day. Paul was a trained tent maker. He knew how to cut the cloth. He knew how to sew the cloth. He knew how to where to reinforce the tent so that it would last. He knew how to design them. He knew how to make tents. He was a skilled tent maker. He'd been trained to do it. It's hard work. Hard work. Think about working in a garment factory where you're making clothes without the privilege of automatic machinery, electric sewing machines, and the various kinds of machinery that we have in our day. Everything done by hand, every stitch in Paul's day would be done by hand, and cutting that cloth, measuring that cloth, cutting that cloth, and in the case of tents, pretty heavy cloth. This is just hard manual work. There's a lot of skill involved in it, but it's just hard manual work, and that's what Paul did. He made tents in Corinth. We know that. You can read about that in Acts 18:3. And we know that he worked in other places besides Ephesus. Here in Acts chapter 20, he's referring to what he did in Ephesus, but he makes a similar reference in his epistles to the Thessalonians. Check it out in 1 Thessalonians 2:9 and 2 Thessalonians 3:8. And so when his outside support was not sufficient at any particular place, he would find a job generally making tents, and away he went. He worked. That's what he did at Ephesus. He worked. He worked. And he worked hard to support himself and, interestingly, even supported other members of his missionary team. He provided, he says, for my necessities. That would be the income necessary to feed him and take care of him, house him, whatever was going on then. You know that these hands have provided for my necessities and for those who were with me. He's talking about fellow gospel workers who are, in this particular case, unnamed. He might have been talking about Timothy. Why wasn't Timothy working with his hands to support himself? We don't know. And we don't even know that he's got Timothy in mind here, but he very likely may. We do know that Timothy had, as Paul calls it in 1 Timothy 5:23, some frequent infirmities. Oft infirmities is the language of the old King James. But it's also possible that there weren't any jobs available. Paul was a trained and skilled tent maker, and there was possibly a job opening there. There may not have been jobs readily available for some of the others. We don't know exactly what was going on. Or Paul may simply have strategized what would be best. He may have calculated that, yes, he could put this person, that person out in day labor, working one day at a time, but the wages would be so minimal that the cause of the gospel might be better served if they continued working full-time at the gospel, and Paul worked at a skilled job, tent making, that paid a whole lot more than day wages, and he could support two or three people with his labor, whereas the others could only potentially be able to support themselves. I don't know. He doesn't give us the details. We don't know why this particular arrangement was the one decided upon, or whether it was a decision at all, but just was a response to the circumstances. Paul could find a job they couldn't. That would dictate these circumstances. Or Paul could make more money than they could, and that would cause a calculated decision to do it this way. We don't know, but the point is that Paul worked hard with his hands. And that teaches us, in the first place, the dignity of labor and, yes, the dignity of manual labor. I say it again, there's nothing wrong with that. Nobody ought to consider themselves to be above that. That is an attitude of carnal pride, of reprehensible snobbishness and pride that some people have. Nobody ought to consider themselves too good to work with their hands. Labor is good. It's dignified. Manual labor is blessed by God. And we see that in the example and words of the Apostle Paul. We also see in this Paul's motive for gospel ministry. Obviously not money. If Paul were in the gospel ministry for money, then he would have bailed out at this time, wouldn't he? The money's not coming in. I'm going home. I'm not going to stay out here in this missionary world without any support. I'm going home. But you see, his motive wasn't money. It was the gospel. And when you have good motives, your motives are always going to be tested. Are you willing to sacrifice for your goal of serving Christ? Are you? A lot of people say they want to serve Christ, but they're not really willing to sacrifice. They're not willing to do the hard things that are necessary for them to accomplish their stated goal. We've all seen people who have said that they were called to the ministry, but they never made it. Sometimes it's because they weren't willing to go to school, to Bible college, to seminary, to get training. Well, why weren't they willing to go? Because nobody offered to pay their way. I've seen that happen. Well, sometimes people do offer to pay your way or to help you with your expenses, and that's wonderful, that's beneficial. That's kind, that's thankworthy, but if that doesn't happen, does that mean that you can't go, or does that just mean you're going to have to work harder to make it happen? I know in my situation, nobody paid my way. Now, I say that, I have to back up and explain. In my case, I was able to go to school while I lived at home. My family lived in a town where there was a good school to train ministers of the gospel that I was able to attend, so it made it easier for me to pay my own way. In other words, my family was providing housing for me, what sometimes is called room and board. Food was provided for me when I was at home. I probably ate at least as many meals away from home as I did at home because of my busy schedule and not being able to run home every time it was time to eat. But I had to pay my own tuition, I had to buy my own books, I had to buy my own clothes, I had to provide my own transportation, and I never thought anything about it. I never really expected my parents to do any of those things. It never occurred to me that they should. I was aware that other students in school had parents who were paying their way, and that was fine. But it never occurred to me that I should expect my parents to do that. They weren't really in a good position to do it, and God had placed me in a position where there was a way for me to go to school if I was willing to work hard. And at times I was working three jobs and going to school full time. And I look back on it now and I say, how was that possible? Sometimes I scratch my head and say, I don't know how I did it. I really don't. I know I couldn't do that now at my age and stage in life, but I was young then. Now, did that mean I got straight A's in all my studies? No. Well, isn't that more important? I'm not so sure it is. I observed over the years that the students whose family or someone else paid their way so that they weren't required to work generally didn't do as well in school as the students who had to work. Now, sometimes I think you can reach a tipping point where you have to work too much and aren't able to get the education, which is your main reason for being in school. So there is a balance there, but in my observation, the students who had to work and pay their own way, or at least part of their own way, did better in school, got better grades overall in most cases, and did better in life when they got out of school. I've seen some of those students who had a completely paid ride in school, and when they got out, they seemed to expect that they would continue to have a paid ride in everything they did through life. Never really seemed to have a work ethic, never seemed to be willing to take a difficult job. They were looking for a position, but not a job. They are looking for something that can bring in the money that they want to live the lifestyle that they aspire to live, but they don't want to work at it very hard. I don't know that parents do their young people a favor by paying their whole way in school. I think it takes a lot of wisdom, but I would recommend that parents find out the situation. Things have changed since my day. I think it was easier in my day to support yourself through school than it is today. The cost of school in relationship to cost of wages and other expenses has gone up more. It's one of those things that has accelerated, I think, more quickly than wages. So, relatively speaking, it's harder to do that today, but it's still possible to help yourself. I can tell you what we did with our children. We had four children, and by the help and grace of God, all of them have college educations, and two of them have graduate degrees beyond the four-year college education. And we helped all of them. Not all of them did not help them all in exactly the same way. We evaluated the situation in each case, and we said, okay, here's the package that we believe will work for you. We can provide this much, and then you need to provide this much. And you can do that in a combination of working during the school year and also getting a summer job and working during the summer. So you're going to provide this much, and we'll provide this much, and we think that'll get you through. And it did, all of them. They all got through eventually that way and did well. All got out and had a good work ethic, good training, good education, and a good work ethic. Not afraid of hard work. Well, Paul shows us that right here. He dignifies labor, working hard. We've got to adopt these proper biblical attitudes in order to please the Lord. Until next week, Greg Barkman saying good day. May God give you His eternal peace.